Welcome to Solid Science, a podcast that is about soil.
Well, it's not about soil, but about its ecology and what we can learn from it. And it's about science.
Well, it's not about science, but how knowledge is produced. But it is about people.
It's not about people, but about their experiences.
Hi, I'm Romy, a young researcher that studies terrestrial systems.
And I'm Carlos, two soil microecologists working in conservation ecology.
Today, we will talk about soils at the interface between terrestrial and marine ecosystems, and we invited Ana Carolina Fernandez to talk with us about it. Today, we are here with Ana Carolina Fernandez. Ana, can you quickly introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you, Romy. My name is Ana Carolina Ruiz Fernandez, and I am a researcher at the National Autonomous University of Mexico. I work for the Institute of Marine Science and Limnology in Mazatlan, Mexico. And my specialty is the historical reconstruction of environmental changes by using sediment cores dated with lead to tin. This includes the studies of changes in organic matter budgets and contamination and land use changes and things like that. We use a lot of proxies to reconstruct the historical changes of all these impacts to the environment.
So how would you frame your research if you would have to give it a label?
We call it environmental geochemistry.
You said that you are looking at, I'm guessing, deep level sediments. Yeah. So in terms of the soils that you are capturing, and you're also working in this interface between terrestrial and marine, because it's typically working in these mangrove systems. So what makes these soils different from everything else?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that I don't call it soil.
Okay.
I call it sediments. You know, we have this this kind of environment where you receive particles from everywhere, from the atmosphere, from the rivers, from the sea, from the all the land that is around the mangrove system. So all these are arriving forming layers, and these layers have attached lead to tin. That is this radio chronometer that we use for putting the dating. Mm-hmm. And lead to tin only works if the particles are trapping what is arriving from the atmosphere. So if these were soils, I would never be able to date this course, you know. So these are sediments that are arriving from many places and mixing together, trapping a lot of things, including lead to tin, which is my main focus. And what is the difference of the mangroves from other systems that I have worked? Because mangroves is only one of the systems I work. And but the most important things that this ecosystem have is the incredible capacity that it has to collect organic matter. It's a huge amount of organic matter, organic carbon accumulating in these systems. And the accumulation rates of these sediments is so high that what we accumulate, it's rapidly separated from the atmosphere and from the layer that has penetration of oxygen. So the degradation of the organic carbon in this ecosystem is very slow in comparison with other ecosystems. Sure. And this is very important for us in terms of climate change, because what we are trying is to identify all these ecosystems that are sinks of organic carbon that are not degraded so fast. So the release of carbon dioxide is small in comparison with other systems. And that contributes to reduce the amount of CO2 that will go to the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. But when you say it's not soil, What I'm interpreting is that you say it's not soil because it's not mobilized, or it's not, doesn't, so it doesn't mix too much, it doesn't have maybe so much biodiversity inside. Is that why you say it's not soil?
No, it's a very basic definition. You know, the soil, it's basically this kind of material that is produced from the weathering of the rocks that develops in situ and is mixed with the plant, the residues of the plant that arrive to be installed in this area. But basically, the soils are formed in a single place. In contrast to the sediments, that the definition is the mixture of these particles that come after the erosion and transport, mm-hmm. and then arrive to the water column and finally settle. So it's a material that comes from many places at the same time and sure. includes the transport. So this is very interesting, because having all this mixing of particles, sedimentary column can tell you about what is happening in this particular aquatic ecosystem, okay? But also tells you about what is happening in the continent, because it's receiving particles and changes from what is transported from the continent. Mm-hmm. If we are talking about soils, we are talking a place that is erosive. Instead of accumulating, it's a place that will be losing particles instead of accumulating particles. That's why I always try to make this distinction. I know that there is a strong movement trying to say that everything is soil, and I think it's a practical strategy, because soils are very visible, and you can plant there, you have agriculture, you produce food. And for that reason, there is more budget to study it. And the sediments are below the water. Nobody sees, nobody put attention to them. And they want to put all together as a soil so they can have money to study everything.
Sure, but you, I would argue that, so from your definition, actually, most of the agricultural places would be in sedimentary regions, because they would be in valleys. So typically valleys are, although they are not underwater, they are also affected by erosion, sure, but they are mostly sinks in terms of particles. So they mostly receive soil rather than erode soil. And these valleys, they are typically also in sedimentary areas, although we call it soil. So it's still soil from a soil ecology perspective. This is still soil, and it's, and again, typically an agricultural soil that is very rich because of this sedimentation. So it's transporting carbon, it's transporting organic matter from other places. Yeah. So you would not consider those soils. That's my question.
Yeah. In the fact that if this place had a rock that was deteriorated, weathered, and accumulated because the plants were retaining these particles, mm-hmm. it's a soil. It's the process okay. of how it was formed, you know, initially. And in the mangroves, for instance, you can very frequently find two very distinct segments in the column, on the sedimentary column. The basis, that is soil, that you can see that has a different kind of delta carbon 14. The characteristics of the organic matter is totally different. Mm-hmm. And this was a continental soil. You know? But then sea level start rising, the water start coming, transporting the seeds for the mangroves, then installed, and you can see a different kind of particles and different kind of layers forming above this original soil. So for me, it's very clear when you see the comparison. Okay, when this happened, you know, when this this mangrove installed there, you can see it just changing the different kind of material in there.
I guess if you want to investigate now these sediments, you also have to sample them. And you said there are different layers. So how deep do you actually go? If you take like a soil core or a sediment core, how do you do that? And how deep do you go?
Well, normally we try to, in my field, because we are aimed to study recent sediments, because lead to 10 is useful for dating until 100-125 years. So considering the high accumulation rates that this system has, we always aim to collect cores, sediment cores of 1 meter long.
What do you then do with it? So how do you analyze it statistically? Because you bring it to the lab and then it's wet, I guess. You try to keep it wet. What then happens to the soil? Do you first dry it and then you calculate pH and so on? Or what do you usually study and investigate?
Okay, so we collect the sediments inside a tube. We bring it to the lab. We extrude the sediments. We push from below. And then we cut sections of 1 centimeter thick. And mm-hmm. these sections are freeze-dried, then ground. So, and then we analyze organic matter, organic carbon, inorganic carbon, magnetic susceptibility, a huge set of elements, minor and major elements. And we analyze also lead to 10, cesium 137, radium 226 for the dating process. And for the purpose of the organic matter burial, once we have the accumulation rates and organic carbon concentrations, we do all the calculation and the statistics so we can establish the inventory of the organic carbon that is buried below the mangroves. And we also estimate what has been the historical variation of the burial rates, how much organic carbon has been accumulating in this system during the last 100 years, and how the land use changes in the surroundings of the area have modified these burial rates.
So you said organic matter, but you don't mean soil biodiversity with it. So what about the soil biodiversity in the sediment? Is there anything, and how do you study it if you do? So.
It's not soil biodiversity, sediment biodiversity.
Sediment biodiversity.
Thank you, Carlos. Well, in that case, I collaborate with Carlos. I send him the sample so he can understand, analyze and understand what is the biodiversity in this soil sample. Why is that important for me? I mentioned at the beginning that it is the degradation of the organic carbon, a process that is very important for climate change. And we would like to understand what are the organisms that are taking part of this degradation process. And particularly, I would like to understand among the different ecosystems, what are the characteristics that makes that this organic matter is more resistant to the degradation of the organism, and also to how to keep this balance between what the organism made with organic matter. When it's degraded, they release the nutrients that are needed for all the food change in the ecosystem, but having this balance with how much CO2 is released, because we wouldn't like to have increased, which it seems that is happening with the increasing temperatures in the environment.
Okay, so if that changes, how strong is the influence of the terrestrial system? So you are studying, of course, the sediments, but there is an influence of the terrestrial system. So how much or how strong is that influence?
Okay, yes, the influence that we receive from the continent is how much nutrients are being transported to this area, because when you have problems of eutrophication, for instance, you will have, maybe you will change the kind of organisms that are being developed in this area. And I don't know what the consequences of this would be, you know. And we can have also the transport of pesticides or other chemicals that are used in the culture of the soils, in agriculture, being transported with the runoff, for instance, or direct discharges of wastewater. And we don't know how this affects the microbial community there, and how will this affect the inventories of organic matter that we would like to keep preserved for many, many years, because otherwise when it is degraded, it becomes CO2, and then we contribute to climate change.
Yeah. So you mentioned in the beginning that you are a biogeochemist, yeah? So the I was wondering, and you clearly you're looking at these sediments in a very large time scale, but at the same time you are looking at the chemistry of these sediments. Yeah, I was wondering if you have studied how much of this chemistry and structure are affected also by mangroves, by the plants themselves, or by other organisms that live in that space. That so taking an example from what you would call soils, we would have earthworms that can mix the soils, the upper layer of the soil. Yeah. And do you have also this type of organisms in this tide land that you are studying?
Yes, of course. Yeah. We have all these, the benthic and the... not only the benthic on the surface, but all these organisms that go inside, the polychaetes, and you have clams, you have crabs making all this process of mixing. When I see them, I run away to another side because they destroy my my record, my archive, my historical archive. But yes, this kind of environment has all these kind of organisms that will help to destroy or to control many of these organisms, many of these systems would act to destroy molecules that may change the chemical characteristics of the sediments. Mm-hmm. But still, I can see the traces of the increments of such molecules that will indicate me there is a problem of contamination. Sure. But something wonderful that the mangroves have is that they have this capacity to retain a lot of sediments. I mentioned before that they have a high accumulation rates. And these are mainly fine sediments in most cases. And these fine sediments absorb a lot of these contaminants. The organics and trace metals and nutrients are retained. And in that sense, it serves like a filter to the ocean. They retain a lot, this forms like a barrier that avoid that all these contaminants coming from the continent arrive to the open sea.
Mm-hmm. But what I was also thinking is, you said that you run away because it destroys your archive. But when you said that, I was thinking, what? So you sample until 1 meter, yeah? And until when does this happen? So because I'm guessing that it would be on the upper layer of your sediments that this process mostly happens, and if that's the case, what are the real consequences? I know that they affect your archive, but your archive tells a story of pollution, accumulation of organic matter, and so on. But these mixtures, they also have other types of consequences. Maybe, for example, they release more carbon to the atmosphere, or they have other issues. What are the things that happen this year?
I have never studied that in the past. So, but I would say that with the oxidation, of this organic matter, when the crabs and the worms go inside of the sediments, yes, you would have a higher release of CO2 back to the to the atmosphere, as always. Yeah, and sometimes you can have the action of these communities, benthic communities, this in fauna, is not that superficial. Sometimes it can go to 20, 30 centimeters of the sediment core. It's huge what they can do.
So what is the role of the sediments in the system? Because is it only so the particles arrive there and they accumulate there, and of course the mangroves grow there, but do these sediments also function a different role? Are they important, like a storage of nutrients, or is it only going directly up to the mangroves and then the sediments are transported?
Well, I would say that if we consider that the microbes are the basis of all the food change in the in our planet, and they live and they constitute a huge amount of biomass in the sediments, I would say that the sediments are really important, because it's in there where the microbes obtain the energy, and they used what is buried there to do the process of release of nutrients that will become food for many other organisms, plants in the ecosystem. So the sediments are the basis of all this, and also. To have these sediments and ecosystems that it sustains, like the mangrove, is very important also for physical protection of our coasts. But we have these huge communities of mangroves. If you have a storm, a hurricane, if these mangroves are not there, if the sediments are not there, I cannot tell you, I cannot imagine what happen to the people living in the coast. Sure. It's very important as a protective barrier for many, many things.
So then I'll have a different question. So what's the importance of the soil in these systems? So you said that the soil is there, but then you have sediment. So what is the importance of the soil layer in these systems?
Well, it's the basis of everything. Because talking about the mangroves, okay? If you don't have this space of soil where the mangrove can establish and develop, so you have a problem with the preservation of the coastal zone. This is a problem, in fact, that has been studied from at least a couple of decades, that when you have the erosion of the coast and there is no continental, there is no soil space where the mangroves of all these coastal species can migrate. So you are in risk of losing this piece of land as a whole in the future. So it is very important that there is still soil where the mangrove can establish and accumulate the sediments.
You talked about the conservation and the aspects related to the protection of these sites. There are two, for me, there are two aspects. One is of national security, actually, because you can lose land, your country can lose land by this process. But the other component of this is the protection of the environment itself. Can you tell us a bit of what is the protection status, for example, in Mexico, of these systems?
Well, it is currently is strong in paper, not really in practice. And, you know, Mexico has a set of laws protecting the environment is part of many international conventions for the protection of the coastal environment, a strong liquid protection, a strong protection for the mangroves. Mexico recognized the importance of the mangroves for the protection of the coastline, for the protection of the biodiversity, because the nursery of a lot of species and many species of commercial importance. But we can see almost every week in the news that there is a new hotel, a new infrastructure that is going to be built, and they have put machines and they have destroyed how, I don't know how many hectares of mangroves. So it's this terrible conflict between what we have written in the law, what most people understand that is important to preserve, but we also see constantly that the interest of the monetary interest is above that.
So what are currently the research needs? So if we are scientists, we can't really influence policy, but what needs to be studied in these systems?
Well, I would say that it is very important to understand what is happening with the organisms, the microorganisms that we have in this ecosystem, and how can we help to understand how to preserve these microorganisms that makes a better result for us in terms of giving more health to the ecosystem and to reduce the amount of CO2 or methane to the atmosphere. When we have growing amount of microbes that are methanogens, the genera that release more methane, we are increasing the potential of getting hotter and hotter. Our climate, it's becoming more difficult for us as a species to live. So how can we improve the knowledge about it? I think is to promote the studies in a really long term. A big problem that we have, the researchers, is that we always have a small project with a budget that allow us to work maybe 1 or 2 years in a subject and then it's cut. And there is very small long-term studies that allow us to understand really what is happening in the environment. So my question would be, what are the conditions that we should preserve or to install in a system that allows increasing, what allows to reduce these organisms that produce more methane to the atmosphere, because it's a very potent greenhouse gas. So if we know that long periods of hot weather produce more higher amount of these organisms, how can we help the ecosystem to reduce this kind of organism and go back to the original conditions where this kind of organism were not dead or were in a minor amount than today?
There are several news that show us that mangroves, the area of mangroves is declining. For example, in Australia, in Southeast Asia, there are many news related to that. And that happens together with also declines in coral areas. Is this also happening in your region? And no. And why is that? No? No. Okay. And do you understand why is the difference between your region and these regions?
Yeah. There was the last report that we have, the last inventory of mangroves that we had in Mexico, have shown that the amount of hectares, the area had grown for the mangroves in most of the coast of Mexico. Various specific areas had been affected, but because of anthropogenic intervention. But in general, the report says that the amount of mangroves in our country is growing. And for the corals, yes, it's reducing. But this is they said that the problem with corals is a multifactorial thing, but basically it's causing illness to the colonies, and this is affecting with the bleaching of the coral reefs.
Mm-hmm. To end a bit more positive, I have a final question to you. What can a young researcher do now? So if I'm interested in the field, where should I start?
Where can you start? I would say that it is important to start in a group, in a good group of research, in a group where there is this dynamism and the interest of not only to do the research in the lab, but also to get involved, being involved with the decision makers. I think that this makes a feedback that allows you to see where are the real problems that you can address in your research. For many years, I have observed that we sometimes do research that interests me as a person, but it's not really giving an impact, not making an impact in the society. Mm-hmm. So I would say that to start, it would be interesting that you observe a different kind of research group and choose to belong to these groups that are working for the improvement of our society, for the improvement of the condition where we as human beings are living, you know, because we are interested in preserve our home, the space where we live, and to try to make better for the rest of the population.
Yeah, that's a wise suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ana Carolina. So, Romy, what did we learn today?
We learned that it's not cold soil, it's sediment.
That's true. Although I'm not sold totally in that idea, but okay. Yeah.
I think I like the idea that soil is something that forms from rocks, and then sediment is something that comes from somewhere else and accumulates there.
Sure. So that's a geological so she comes from a geological perspective, you know, it's a geophysics perspective that I understand. But for example, for me, it's still quite hard to fit a valley into this logic, because it's still sediment. That's mm-hmm. still true. But there's a local formation process when you mobilize the land, for example. You can also transform that sediment into something else that maybe Ana Carolina would agree that it's soil. Maybe, I don't know. Let's see. But I also like that difference. But in my case, it was because she was saying that her work is only possible if this is sediment. So if this has these sedimentary layers, she can work. If it is soil, so if it is mixed by animals, whatever it is, she cannot do any work. And that for me was actually quite interesting to understand.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's also the different perspective that you mentioned. And we as ecologists, we want to study the dynamic system. We know it's an ecosystem, it changes. We know whenever we go into the field, it's a status and a momentum that we are observing.
Yeah.
And she is more interested in the history of it. So she wants to have these layers and to investigate what happened in the past or also in the surroundings, right? If it's sediment from somewhere else. So it's a different view on it and also a different question, of course, in mind.
Yeah, but we didn't explore this with her, but she told us that she looks, let's say, 100 years, 125 years into the past. And she also said that she uses proxies to understand these differences across time. But at the same time, she said that we need long-term studies. So this is, I'm guessing, for the future. So long-term in terms of starting now, but continuing them for a longer period of time. And I was trying to, in my mind at least, conjugate these two ideas of having a study method that you sample and that you can see 100 years before, but you still have to continue it into the future to continuously see changes in your system. Yeah.
If you can see them that fast, yes. I mean, yeah, sure. 100 years is pretty long for a scientist.
Yeah, sure. But at the same time, for example, I forgot to ask a question. I will have to come back to Anna Carolina afterwards, because we discussed with Julia the fact that she takes the soil back because it takes a lot of time. And in these cases, it takes 100 years to form these sediments. But I guess because it's a tidal region, you don't take the soil back because the hole is completely covered afterwards. Yeah. Yes. So thinking about these aspects actually would be interesting in terms of conservation. No?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess that we see each other next time.
Yes, we do.
Thank you, Homi.